Round up the usual suspects.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomo, Matt Byrne on the board. We got Greg Pappas in studio. We'll have Jan Flanagan later and Nancy Long Graham later. So, a good show. lots of stuff to, as soon as I can talk. A lot of stuff to talk about. Nobel Prize in Economics. I don't see Greg Pappas' name here. Greg, what happened to you? I thought you were nominated.
They said I was too positive.
They'll never say that. You could be the only guy in the world that's grumpier than me.
I'm pretty optimistic.
About what?
You know, everything in general. You just gotta...
Just because the Bears win, you're optimistic?
Keep that head up and keep going and, you know.
What does Nancy say? You take the hit and keep on going.
Yeah. I mean... It's pretty easy to see what's coming. You just got to prepare yourself for it.
We got to be like the Stooges, duck, dodge, and hide.
Right, right.
God, it was a great skit. Was it Corporal Duck, Captain Hyde, Dodge? Anyway, the University of Chicago rings up another one, even though they only have a third of the prize. The people
here we go again.
Darren Ekamoglu, Simon Johnson, and James Robinson. James Robinson is the dude from the University of Chicago. And
talking about how the wealth of nations, right?
Yep, the wealth and why nations fail. Origins of power, prosperity, and poverty.
The biggest duh you could do.
Well, but they claim the poor rule of law and institutions that exploit the population do not generate growth or change for the better. Cause they write that about the U.S. Actually, they were writing that about Africa, but they could write that about the U.S. now, can't they?
You could write anything about everything as long as you have enough degrees. And some people might believe you.
You don't think that what they did was true?
I think, in general, economists have probably been more of a detriment than positive.
What kind of economists? There's a million different kinds.
Most of them.
Most of them.
Most of them. 99% probably.
What about me?
I think most of them.
Hal? Russell?
I think one of the cooler things that have been done in the past few years was maybe Hal Varian figuring out what they did over at Google. That was a game changer. Other than that,
that wasn't economics.
Hal Varian was the theory behind the versions of auctions they do for those ads, which was actually groundbreaking, but you know.
Well, actually,
or we could talk about inequality.
Well, there's several different kinds of economists. Now, Hal's a big time mathematician in there because he knows gazillions about math, which I don't. Then there's a business economist group like Russell that tries to talk about how your economic policy and business interact in the markets and those kinds of things. And then there's behavioral economists like me. I find it absolutely fascinating, and on the behavioral side,
it's fascinating, but it's not science. So,
behavior, human behavior, is science.
Well, good luck.
But I mean, you can predict just about anything. You can't predict the timing or anything like that, but you can predict just about anything because that's the way people operate.
Yeah. Doesn't take textbooks to figure that one out.
Well, some people think that when some groups of society, I mean, right now, do you think that the people like the Bezos in the world and Musk, do you think it's, they think it's massively positive for a few people who they think are the absolute cream of the crop to have all the money and make all the policy?
Yeah, that would more likely be the University of Chicago people.
No, got no.
Well, yeah, that's where it came from.
What are you talking about? I went there. That's not where it came from.
Well, people like Richard Thaler and you know, the strict market is God type people. Those are University of Chicago type.
Market is God until people get involved in it and start messing with the market, then it's not God.
The efficient market hypothesis, that's all from here.
It is, except the first person to tell you that if you start having governments make monopolies, how it all goes awry, which it has.
Yeah. It's not really hard to predict, though. You don't need calculus for that.
When we used to do exams, some of those classes, the first thing they'd say is, assume perfect competition, assume a cartel, assume a monopoly. All the answers were different.
Assume what is never possible.
What do you mean? A monopoly is totally possible.
Right. Assume there's no monopolies and there's...
Well, perfect competition is...
Perfect competition. Good luck.
I'd say agriculture is pretty close. I would say bars are fairly close.
With or without subsidies.
Well, barbershops are pretty close. I mean, there's some.
Very, very few.
Exactly right. But there are some.
Right. So...
Yeah. And does any individual farmer control the price?
No.
Okay, well...
But there are only a few institutions that can really dominate the inputs, and it's... And the government really is what's responsible for those price floors. So there's market distortion all over the place.
Well, that's right.
I don't know. And if I'm going to talk trash about economists, I should say, you know, what should be studied. And I guess what should be studied are things that are more... are predictable, meaning stuff like physics, stuff like I would say chemistry, and less human behavior.
I would say that if you were to tell me 5 years ago exactly what the
math is, probably the origin of what
the government was going to do in terms of money supplies and policies, I could have told you exactly what we're doing today.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's because of incentives, not because of anything.
Well, it's having every action, the outcomes being predictive. And the problem we have now is people don't know enough about economics, because some of the exams we had where they would take something, Milton Friedman's final was like a quote from Time magazine, something about, I don't know, it was price controls or something. Work this policy out for the next 30 years and how it's going to affect every part of society.
Right, that's trying to predict the future.
But you can.
Yeah. You can try.
Let's put it this way. If the Fed decides they're going to print 50% more money, I can tell you what's going to happen, right?
Right. In the short term.
Well, in the long term, we're all dead. I mean, you know, at some point... Anyway, what is there any...
Long-term world... That was Keynes, right?
Oh, Keynes. You know, Keynes was the economist at Versailles.
Yeah, I love Keynes, but...
Why?
You know, his ideas kind of have gone awry.
Well, the idea, and you still hear it on TV...
One of my favorite quotes is actually Keynes.
What does it say?
I can pull it up for you. It's a long one. Give me till after break on that one.
All right, but the interesting part about Keynesian versus monetarist is I almost challenge you to find a purely Keynesian economic policy from a government. I don't know if they ever were independent.
Independent meaning?
Well, the Keynesian model basically says that if you want to increase production and kick the market, basically give it a kickstart in the short term, what you do is you tax people and spend it, or you spend it and go into, you know, or you could go into debt and tax people and spend it, or you could borrow money.
Okay, here's the quote. This is Keynes, by the way. Lenin is said to have declared the best way to destroy a capitalist system was to debauch the currency. By continuing process of inflation, governments can confiscate secretly and unobserved an important part of the wealth of their citizens. By this method, they are not only confiscating arbitrarily, and while a process impoverishes many, it actually enriches some.
Sure, without a doubt.
The sight of this arbitrary rearrangement of riches strikes not only at security, but at confidence in equity of the existing distribution of wealth. Those to whom the system brings windfalls beyond deserts, maybe he meant desert,
yep,
and even beyond their expectations to become profiteers, who are the object of the hatred of the bourgeoisie, whom the inflationism has impoverished, not less than that of the proletariat. As in the inflation proceeds and the real value of the currency fluctuates wildly from month to month, all permanent relations between debtors and creditors, which form the ultimate foundation of capitalism, become so utterly disordered as to be almost meaningless, and the process of wealth getting degenerates into a gamble and a lottery.
Did he just describe the last 6 years?
Well, yeah, and he was crediting Lenin for saying that.
Lenin, according to Armin Hammer, you know that name, you home known from Occidental Petroleum, but there's a massive history of Armin Hammer long before Occidental Petroleum. He said Lenin was probably the smartest man he ever met.
Yeah.
The second smartest was Roosevelt.
They knew what they were doing, that's for sure.
They're amazingly well-read. They had a sense of society. But that is the thing. Inflation, Milton Friedman used to say all the time, problem inflation, when you first start it up, it feels so good. And after that, it just, all it does is tear things apart. Because some people are benefiting by it. The guys who were the absolute, in the Weimar Republic, when they started pumping the currency, just pumping it out there, who do you suppose were the biggest cheerers for the policy?
Anybody who owned assets?
Anybody who owned had a mortgage on a farm.
Yeah, just pay it off.
Pay it off. All of a sudden, I owe you $100, right? And then, because we had a bet on the Bears, and I took the other team. I owe you $100. All of a sudden, tomorrow they double the currency, and the first thing I do is run over and give you your $100.
Nice.
And you say, well, gee, I think I need $200. Bet was $100, buddy.
Nice.
Yeah, nice, huh? Speaking of which, the Bears, Detroit, well, they had a big game last night, but then a bad night for them, huh? That one kid getting hurt.
Yeah. I think the Bears beating up on, I mean, I guess, what, they played Carolina and now...
yeah, the two worst teams.
Yeah, it's their wins, so good for them. I thought the Bears were going to be 4-6 wins, and it looks like they already got 4, so...
Well, you know, they are. It's not like they beat both teams by like a point. I mean, they're playing well. They're a interior lineman or two away from having a pretty real team. The defense is about as good as anybody's, I think.
Yeah, the defense plays well.
Had a couple of injuries, but you know, some interesting stuff. The baseball, Dodgers took a big lead. They had a big game last night. We'll see how they do. And the Mets, I think, are pretty resilient. But it is.
Most importantly, my fantasy football team won.
Really?
Yeah, I got kind of lucky, but, you know, that happens too. So, very, very excited for next week's matchups.
Are you one of those guys that you love it whenever Jimmy Jones loses the Dallas Cowboys?
Well, I was playing Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb, so I, I was. Hoping they wouldn't start throwing, and even when they did try to throw, you know, what a mess that was.
So whose idea was it, since today is Columbus Day, probably should wait for Mr. Flanagan for this, but I won't. Whose idea was it to, first of all, how do you know who's in the grave?
We're digging up
Columbus.
We're digging up Columbus now.
Yeah, we dug up Columbus.
I didn't even know they found him. I guess he was...
Where the hell is he buried? I mean, how does anybody even know?
Santo Domingo something?
I...
They found him in some cathedral.
Okay, then.
Or at least they thought, yeah. I don't know.
Well, here you go. People visit the mausoleum of Christopher Columbus in the Cathedral of Seville, Spain.
But he's not there, is he?
He's in his he's got to be his mausoleum, don't you think?
His mausoleum.
Well, see, you could have been as contrary as you are. Jackie Gleason had a show way, way, way back, long before the Honeymooners. was You Asked the Question. And he had Jane Mansfield with everything showing. Crazy Guggenheim, some professor sort of dude with his funky hat, and somebody else, and that was the panel. And he would ask questions like, who is buried in Grant's tomb? And immediately, like, James Mansfield would go, don't even start. We know it's not Grant. So, and they would debate who wrote the Monroe Doctrine. It was stuff like that, and they would debate the thing.
I don't know. I thought some people thought he was in Dominican Republic.
That's what I'm saying. The first thing you do is, how do you know that's the body?
Right? Yeah.
So anyway, it turns out that he is a, what do they call these guys?
He's actually in Spain.
Yeah, in Seville, according to, well, that's where the mausoleum is.
So they found him.
Well, it had his name on it for forever.
His family's there, right?
I guess.
Yeah.
It turns out he was a Sephardic Jew.
Huh.
You might ask, what the hell is a Sephardic Jew? Here you are. The Jewish diaspora population with cultural roots in Spain, Portugal, North Africa, and parts of the Middle East. 1492, same year as he discovered America, right? The Jews were expelled from Spain in 1497 from Portugal. Many saw refuge in the Mediterranean, especially in the Ottoman Empire. They developed their own culture. After World War I, many Sephardic Jews fled the Mediterranean and settled in the United States. I think that's the group that's in... I think I talked to some of those guys. They wanted me to hedge some gold.
So do they know who his family was? Was he...
I don't know that.
Yeah.
There's subgroups. I know there's a group. The group that I was talking to about,
like something about his parents or something.
Yeah, these guys have wanted me to hedge some gold for him. Still might. Interesting group. They're not hooked into the Israeli Jewish group at all. They think that the center of religions. Their group in Brooklyn. It must be these guys.
Huh.
Man, they got all kinds of holidays that the other guys don't have. So I thought it was something different about them. I was going to say weird, something different, but they seemed like nice enough dudes. I mean, seemed to have a lot of gold. What do you think about the metals now? What would you do with them if somebody gave you a chunk of
gold up like 20 or 30% this year?
It's exact same as the market.
Yeah.
The funny thing is that's odd, which is impacting, although we've had a really good last few months.
Gold's gaining a lot the past... what, 2 years?
If you look at the market versus gold, there's been no change.
Right.
Either one. If you look at them both together. But anyway, why do you think the gold miners, which I have a lot of investors in, why do you think they're lagging? I would think.
Why do I think they're lagging?
Yeah.
That's because they're not good at business in general. They're just relying on the price going up, which is a dangerous strategy, but I guess it works. So,
but it
works when gold's going up.
But it shouldn't be linear. If you make gold, make money.
It shouldn't be linear because their expenses probably have gone up similar to whatever the gold price has gone up. So it looks, you know, there's an effect on.
But if gold is 2,000 and you're making money, and all of a sudden it goes to 2,500.
Yeah, that's half the equation.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you should make like a real lot more than 20% more.
You should.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they're either taking it out and or spending more on worthless stuff.
You think they're hedging it?
I don't think they're, no.
You're a board of trade dude. When I first came down to the floor, a lot of guys like trading the gold stocks. And there was no gold future, I don't believe. Then there was kilo gold. There was a bunch of them. There's only like one left. But they would trade these gold stocks. And somehow or another, every month, certainly every quarter, the big gold companies would publish what percentage they had hedged and for how long. And I have not seen that report in a decade. Is it still around?
I haven't seen it. I'm assuming that's probably part of investor relations, but you know, well, definitely you want to see it, but there's been so much interest lost in those guys that in favor of just...
Well, you got to buy NVIDIA. That's what you do.
Right, right.
What do you make of... and, you know, we're here at PTI, which you're close to.
You know, with NVIDIA processors, you can mine digital gold.
Yeah, well... you know, what did Lou say that those guys are making?
I don't know. Joke's on me. I missed it at 200 and 300.
What do you think those guys by Cripple Creek, where he has his place, he said they're going through all the old entrails and some of the old
ouch
tunnels.
Yeah.
Says they're making 50 or 60 million a month.
Wow.
And they want to buy the town of Cripple Creek because they think there's a huge vein under the town.
I mean, that's going to cost them.
I don't think there's running any people, but yeah, it would cost them. I mean, evidently they think there's a boatload of gold still up there that they may have missed.
Yeah, that would pay right now, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And actually, if they did, you know, I would be one of the first to sell? To sell, yeah.
God. You can always count on you. You know, sell.
Buy the rumor, sell the news?
Well, if you had... The reason why I ask is we're starting to get some clients here, as you all know, at PTI that are... There's not a whole lot of people yet, I'll use that term, they look at their portfolio that's somewhat broad-based, that they've been doing forever. The market just keeps going up every day, so they're not into any trying to, don't want to change or protect or anything for some reason, even though I think it's getting kind of high here, and you might want to protect a little bit. But the people with single issue, concentration issues, are starting to be a little nervous. So we're getting a lot of clients lately that have, and by the way...
You mean putting your entire future in the hands of a few yahoos at a certain company is risky?
I'll tell you a story from a guy a long time ago. I mean, the dude came in and he had 10,000 shares of Exxon. Exxon was nowhere near this high. This is, you know, years ago. And he says, you know, I got this Exxon stock. It's from my dad left it to me. So he must have got the tax move up, so that's a good thing. So he says, and I've got, you know, I want to protect it or whatever. And I said, well, first of all, do you really want, is your only thing, and it was like his only thing in the portfolio, you really want 10,000 shares of Exxon stock as your only stuff? And he goes, well, my dad had it, so I've got it. And I said, okay, what do you think your dad would say about that? He'd probably say I was nuts. He had it because he, like, worked there. And I said, let me ask you this. Here's just a million-dollar question. This is you. It has nothing to do with me. Whatever, say it was worth $1.5 million. I said, if you didn't have any portfolio whatsoever, and I dropped $1.5 million in the middle of the table in Benjamin's, would you immediately open up an account and direct me to put every single nickel of it in Exxon?
Yeehaw!
The guy goes...
That's called being a cowboy.
Yeah, the guy goes, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
And I said, okay, well, now you have it. I don't think you have any tax consequences. Do you think we might want to lighten up on it a little bit, or do you want to just protect it? Do you want to... It's hard to sell calls in there because it has a big dividend and it's kind of a trending stock, but you could do it. So do we want to ladder it in such a way we, you know, say the stock was 60, we'll sell some of the 65 calls, some of the 70, some of the 75. So if it marches up, we'll make some money in the meantime. And if 1,000 shares go at 65, it's okay. We ended up doing something like that, and he was pretty happy with it. If you ask somebody, Greg, you're from...
It's the same thing as having the indexes now, though, too, a little bit, because you're so heavily dependent on those top five companies that you really are way... You're at the whim. If you're in the index, you're at the whim of those companies more so than the rest.
Well, the Qs, you're 48%, right? 49?
Yeah, that's kind of... As long as you know, you know, that's the good thing. If you're thinking that you don't want to be in those stocks, well, maybe you should skip the index entirely, because, or at least wait until it gets at least a little bit more balanced.
But those stocks are going up because people are putting money in the indexes. How many people are passive investors that every week $300 goes in their 401k?
Yeah. So that's kind of a circular problem, or, you know, maybe not problem, but, you know, that's a concentration. That's a concentration that's getting more... it's exacerbated by...
Well, just let me say, in terms of history, Greg, in 2000, 2001, when that all broke, and the Qs, I believe, well, not a Qs, are 494. They were 120, and they went down to, like, 25.
Right.
The five stacks that were the ones that were in there all got clobbered. The Ciscos, the Oracles, those kinds of things. And I'm talking down 50, 60, 70, 80%. They got absolutely clobbered. And if you looked at them when they were down, and you look at their PE and their revenue per share, you absolutely would never even have thought that they would have traded up as high as they did. The reason why they did is people were pouring money into the queues and people were buying Cisco, Oracle, Dell, Microsoft, and Intel that didn't even know they were buying them.
Yeah, it's a blind allegiance to the ETF movement or the index movement, which is fine as long as you know what you're getting. But if you're just a regular person and you're saying, oh, well, this is the safest thing, well, maybe, but if you know that you've got way more NVIDIA or whatever,
yeah,
then at least you know to pay attention.
If you have a client that has a whole bunch of NVIDIA and they want to sell some NVIDIA and put it in the queues, they're going right back in the NVIDIA, pretty much.
Yeah, right. that's kind of part of what at least my friends ask me about. So when they tell me, hey, I'm going in the indexes, but then I'm also doing the Tesla calls or whatever, say, well, you know, you do have a decent part of that queues in those high tech. You might not have to layer that extra cherry on top, but you know,
that's how you end up with concentration issues.
Yeah,
you sell all the losers every year and buy more of the winners. S&P futures up 8, NASDAQ's up. By the way, it really works until it doesn't. We'll be right back, Mr. John Fallon.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello and welcome back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas in the studio, Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 875, NASDAQ futures up 56, creeping up. But it's boring, we go up every day. Yeah, it's all right, I guess. On Friday, what did we do on Friday before I said we were up every day? On Friday, Dow was up 409, yeah. S&P up 35, yeah. NASDAQ not as much, up 60, but still up. They'll come back today. Right over in Europe, we have DAX up 44.2%, FTSE down 5%, call that flat. CAC around down 24.3%, so mixed and slow there. By the way, this is a bank holiday, a school holiday. Anybody who works for the government, of course, is off. We got rid of Columbus's statues, but we didn't get rid of the holiday, right? Now we find out he's Jewish.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's a...
Uh-oh.
We have Mr. Flanagan and opine on that when he gets on. Does that mean we put the statues back?
Not at Columbia.
Oh, God. Over in Asia, still the rally here is keep going on as these guys do the money in the system thing. Nikkei up 224.5%. Actually, they did not... 10-11, they did not trade today in Japan. Hang Seng, however, did. They're down 159.7%. Mainland China up 67.2%. They're up to 3,284 as they plan on... they're going to stimulate some more. They're going to pour more money into the system. What are they going to do, though, Greg? They weren't going to do interest rate things, reserve requirements. They're going to increase their deficit, right? Isn't that what they said they were going to do?
That's my favorite.
Yeah. Just increase the deficit. Oil down $1.84, $73.72. Brent down $1.80, $77.24. Natural gas down 5 cents, $2.58. RBOB down 5 cents, $2.09. Maybe I shouldn't have put so much gas in. It'd be lower next week. Gold down $4.50, but still $26.71. High end of the range. See if it makes it to 2,700 maybe this week. Silver down 39 cents, $31.36. Copper down 8 cents, $4.41. Foreign exchange, the dollar is a little stronger. Euro is at 109.1, almost under 109. So that's stronger than the dollar. And the British pound, 130.4, was over 132. Was down a little bit. Japan up 57 to 149.70. So that means Japan is going lower as well. Again, that's the opposite. Well, you got to look at that. A Bitcoin up 2,200, 64,874. Might as well have a fake stack in there, too. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports? Bears win. What the hell?
Yeah, good morning. It's currently just about 6:40 here on October 14th, 2024. The weather in Chicago is currently 46 degrees at O'Hare on this Columbus Day. High of 57 today with expected showers, low of 41 tonight. We're looking down in Phoenix now, 77 degrees right now, clear skies. Later in the day, sunny and a high of 99. Yesterday in the MLB, Dodgers win the game against the Mets, 9-0. And in the NFL yesterday, it was week 6 of the 2024 season. Bears won their fourth game this season. This game saw them beat the Jaguars 35-16, as well as that Packers won against Cardinals 34-13. Tonight we see the Bills play Jets. The game starts at 7:15 p.m. Central Standard Time. So I got, Chief, back to you.
We have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed.
Good morning, Tom.
So what are we going to do if we did a DNA test on you and found out you were some odd Jewish sect?
Oh, but it's already been done, Tom. In fact, I just got an update from Ancestry.com yesterday. My new revised DNA profile.
How did you change?
It's always being tweaked. Well, they tweak it depending on, you know, research that shows that, you know, they've been a little sloppy and, you know, the way it was formerly categorized or other, you know, data that they speculate about. So it's continually shifted over the years, but now they say I'm 95% Irish and 5% Scottish. So
this is the Ancestry.com one.
Yeah, not the 23andMe.com. That this is Ancestry.
Well, what's
so, you know, it's been revised periodically. So, you know, I thought I was Scandinavian in 2014. That turned out to be not the case. So I can see how they took Columbus's remains and subjected them to their profiling. They speculate, you know, they can't be exactly sure, but they have, you know, enough data where they can say this is a reasonable assumption, given what we know, you know, about his ancestry and other people. So,
well, that's assuming he's the guy in his tomb.
Yeah, well, and they, you know, apparently they compared the DNA with DNA of family members who they're certain they have, you know, the remains of, his brother and his son. And I'm not sure how they're so certain about that, but this it really doesn't surprise me. This would be consistent kind of with the, you know, what was going on in Spain at the time. And somebody like Columbus, who was clearly an entrepreneur and, you know, a business person who, you know, used his connections really to get royal patronage. And had he converted to Christianity, which seems to be the case, he would have been on good paper with Ferdinand and Isabella when they expelled the Jews that year, in 1492. If you converted, you could stay. If not, you had to leave. So,
well, he left. He went west. He went the other way.
Yeah. And you know, his descendants, too, as far as I know, you know, didn't revert. And I don't know if he was a Murano Jew, somebody who continued to practice his faith in secret even after
he... He was a Sephardic Jew.
Yeah, a Sephardic Jew, which, you know, is the... You know, they were in Spain a long time, all during, you know, the Muslim reign. And the Muslims were very tolerant about the religion, the Jews and Christians. And everybody kind of lived pretty peacefully side by side for hundreds of years. And then, you know, the ones that had, you know, long roots in Spain were spread around Europe, North Africa, and this country, too. So, and they have DNA profiles, I'm sure, that identify them as a discrete group of...
Well, you did the Ancestry one. I'm trying to contrast that in case anybody ever wants to do this. I think our buddy Robert, of course, he always has to be different. He did the National Geographic one, which is totally different. Hmm.
Yeah, I've not done that, but I know people who have, and I've looked at it, and they all do the same thing pretty much. I mean, they use what the things they think they're certain of. You know, how long people, you know, live in particular places, and they interview live people today in Ireland and other places. And of course, a lot of this is misremembered sometimes by people. They're not that sure how long your family's been anywhere, so that there's no real, you know, precision about it. It's at a certain level, but there's broad categories, and you know, they tell you that, you know, when we say you're 5% anything, it could mean you could be as much as 14%. That, you know,
well, that's not good.
No, that shows just how...
Well, I say that for poor Robert, because the National Geographic one, I don't think... I'm not positive. I don't think they would ever say you were Irish. They would say what group you came out of Africa. They can time the different groups. Everything, according to these guys, I mean, I think now there's some research that said there might have been a couple other spots where humanity started, but basically most people think it started somewhere in Africa and in the Middle East, maybe. But anyway, the push up into Europe, for some reason, everybody just didn't walk up and turn left on the Mediterranean where the weather was nice. They kept pushing up into northern Europe by land. So some of the northern Germanic tribes and the Irish tribes actually commingled and coded other stuff with the Neanderthals for a while. They yep. Wasn't like, you know, the last Neanderthal died when the first Homo sapiens showed up. They were together.
No, it was like they passed the torch, you know.
Yeah, there was definitely evidently some of those Neanderthal girls were hot or something, because there was some interbreeding. And that's what the national, I mean, they told Robert what group he was out of Europe. It was pretty old, and I think the average person, I think, has, maybe you can look this up, 1%, 0.5% or something of Neanderthal blood in him. I think Robert's like 3 or something. But you know, it's all the people. I think O blood is a Neanderthal trait. Not everybody. I think red hair is, deep-set eyes.
Yes.
And
yes.
So there's a lot of, actually there's a lot of Neanderthal blood in Irish people.
Yes. Well, it's interesting, too. I mean, a lot of the traits now that they can identify as being descended from parent one or parent two, and they're not sure whether parent one is your father or your mother or vice versa, but they say this is generally how this trait is passed on. So I get all these... things about, you know, am I allergic to cilantro? Do I have a unibrow? What's my susceptibility to being tickled? I mean, all these kind of wild traits that are genetically based, and they can identify, you know, you're very likely this, and it's generally correct. You know, I wouldn't say it's completely correct, but there's lots of extrapolation going on here. And you're right, they often identify, you know, these are people who came from this part of the world. They don't say you are that ethnicity necessarily. They're very cautious how they explain it. But you fit a profile from, say, Western Ireland or Southern Ireland, Northern Ireland, or, you know, Northern France or Southern England. and how your ancestors got there, or what they were originally, or what they became, is, you know, not something they can really say very much about.
Well, the thing is sort of interesting. Once in a while, some buffoon, and I use that term lightly, will write into like Quora or something, and they'll say, "Hey, I'm in like really good shape, and you know, I used to do judo as a kid. Could I beat up a Neanderthal or something?" and the answer is always like, "What are you talking about?" And they put the two skeletons there. They said, "Look at the difference in bone density and muscle mass and stuff. You'd last about a second." You know, and the question is, if they were that physically superior in a lot of ways, was it all mental? That they, or was there some disease that hit them, or what? I mean, why'd they all go? Physically, they're way.
Well, that's just what, you know, all these mysterious vanishings and migrations and unexplained, you know, transfers, or just, you know, historical evidence just sort of goes off the map. Yeah, these are, there's lots of these in history.
Well, what did you make of this talk about switching gears?
By the way, Tommy, just as a sideline, if you're interested in having your dog tested for its DNA ancestry, it gives you those tests too. So.
What if you get some mutt out of the pound? Of course, they're not a mutt. They're mixed breed.
That's what I've done. Yeah.
Why would you even want to know?
A friend and I have done it for a dog. We're sort of confirmed in what our suspicions were about this dog that came from a neighbor who didn't want it anymore.
So you have a dog now?
The dog lives downstairs, you know, in my, you know, partner's apartment. But it's, you know, we got the DNA profile from Ancestry.
What'd they say? He's a mutt?
Well, it's, you know, a little bit of Bichon, you know, a little bit of Havanese, a lot of the Yorkie poo.
Oh, God.
Some poodle, you know, just straight poodle. But it's just like seven or eight breeds intermixed, which is, you know, fairly typical of any dog that isn't, you know, out of some sort of kennel registration. So,
well, the little monster that absolutely loves me to death, little Maggie, I got out to the suburbs and was able to take her for two walks, which she loves. Now, she's 18. She got like three teeth left. She's still, any dog she sees, let me at him. Let me at him. I'll show him. I mean, she's absolutely nuts. I mean, these little dogs with the pushed-in noses all think they're on top of the world, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, they're.
In their own mind, they're just, I don't know. She's such a little bleep. But anyway, what did you make of this? It's funny, Greg and I were jousting before you came on. I don't know if you were listening regarding the Nobel Prize in Economics. These guys, one of the dudes is from the University of Chicago, the other two are from Massachusetts Institute of Technology. They're sharing the prize, but they worked on this kind of almost like the Wealth of Nations, almost like a repeat of Adam Smith, about how the dispersion of wealth, where some people end up with all the money, how unhealthy that is economically, and how it happens, and what government policies get you there. Sounds like those guys do the show with us, for God's sake. That's what we talk about all the time. It's just not healthy. And there's an article on who wrote the thing here today about Elon Musk. Well, he might like it to be a trillionaire. Now, the name lady wrote Charlotte Morabito. Yeah, one of my best buddies from high school and college is Morabito. M-U-R, it's M-O-R.
Sure.
About how, you know, how much of this guy's, I'm not saying the guy's, you know, not brilliant in a lot of ways. How much money did this guy make that Tesla get started by those carbon credits? I mean, they didn't make any money for like a decade if they didn't have that money, right? I mean, whoever heard of giving somebody...
I think it's probably, you know, the core of most of his, you know, wealth building. I can't think of anybody who wouldn't become extremely wealthy if you hadn't received those kinds of advantages. It isn't something on his initiative or creativity or genius, really. I mean, he's a smart business guy, but it's government forkovers, really.
Well, they're also talking about the more money you have, the more tax advantages you get.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, none of these guys are paying 38% or whatever the hell it is. Whatever, you know, whatever's happening, whether they're paying them, and they're paying them here or overseas. I mean, I think all this stuff really needs to get buttoned up, Jen. I don't know how we can have a society that's all just. I mean, I see neither one of the presidential candidates. You know what's weird about this guy? It's almost like I want to get my page on Harold Janine again. I have to believe, I don't know this for sure, maybe I was going to ax you today. This guy is got his nose right up Trump's behind now, right? Now, which I don't have a problem with. You should be able to support anybody you want. I could have sworn that all this, these bills that got him all this money from other people, weren't they Obama era?
They were like the second term, I think. Maybe the first term of Obama.
But if anybody should owe something to the Democrats, it ought to be this guy. I don't think these guys think they owe anybody anything.
Yeah, the real irony about Musk, you know, compared to other tycoons of the past, that he has approached folk hero status in ways that, say, J.P. Morgan or Cornelius Vanderbilt or somebody like that never could or ever would have aspired to. And the free speech, you know, connection now with Musk puts us in a very different kind of, you know, historical frame. Where he's saved his image in a way for the average person who would have very little in common with him, with that kind of wealth. But he's become a standard bearer for things that other tycoons never would have become particularly involved in or identified with. And, you know, somebody like Rockefeller spent his entire career covering up what Standard Oil did, pretty much. And Musk has, you know, taken this in a different direction, which I think sets him apart. You know, you might not, you know, you might have doubts about his talents or whatever, but he's marketed himself in a way that is appealing to a lot of people, regardless of his business acumen or his success. So it's kind of an unusual case, and I don't think there's a real template for it. I don't think he's a genius. He doesn't act like a genius most of the time or talk like
one. I mean, I think when you whatever deal that they gave him, I'm saying you would think you'd have some, you know, some. I don't think Republicans didn't give him that deal. I don't think. How many hundreds of millions of dollars did he get from other people?
From other automobile manufacturers, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a. Well, it's kind of the way, you know, wealth was traditionally built. You know, was. What does Balzac say in a novel? Behind every great fortune, there is a great crime, or I would say several crimes, or, you know, millions of crimes, probably. So he's not, you know, he hasn't done this himself. He's done it with some shrewd manipulation of the automobile market. So,
well, and I guess what I'm saying is there are people, I'm going to say from the, I shouldn't be saying it. People like us from the South Side, if Richard J. Daley gave us, you know, allowed us to somehow have a pathway into some huge piece of property that all of a sudden became some factory in Chicago and we did exceptionally well, I don't think we would have we would feel for the next 20 years we're going to vote for Daley and his kids. I mean, these guys, they think they're... I mean, I'll go back to Harold Janine, the guy from ITT, when he thought all the people who ran governments were just impediments in his way. There's no loyalty in these people that I can see. I mean, if the biggest complaint against Kamala Harris is she comes out of the, you know, the Obama school, right? She's like Obama light, and a lot of people don't want that. Okay, well, if that's true. I think this guy owes somebody in that group like a couple of billion dollars, but I guess he doesn't feel the same way, does he?
No. Well, there is a big disconnect. You know, you've got, you know, officials of the Chicago Teachers Union, you know, driving around in Teslas, and of course Tesla is a non-union shop, proudly so. So this is partly kind of a rallying cry for a union member to be driving around in an automobile. It's not from a union shop. So there's all sorts of things that don't make sense about it to me, and a lot of the allegiance, I think, is, if not misdirected or misguided, it's not really investigated too carefully. So I don't quite understand his full hero status among a lot of the people who are behind it.
If you walked in and my grandfather was an Italian immigrant, became a master boilermaker, he was in the Boilermakers Union. If you walked into the house with a pair of, like, you know, painter's pants or blue jeans that didn't say Union Made on them, your next trip was right back to the store. right back.
Well, this is how unions, you know, got strong and stayed strong by, you know, avoiding having to deal with anything that encouraged non-union, you know, labor. And, you know, it's become less important now as union membership has dwindled. But I find that very funny about Musk, that he's this, you know, righteous figure to the, you know, rank and file, you know, probably a lot of union members who have overlooked the fact that he's, you know, hardly a fan of unions.
Well, we had this discussion a little bit this weekend regarding China, and I forget who the hell he was even talking to, but talking about how difficult it is. I mean, we've been doing the show off and on with Jan and I since we've been doing it for 20 years. One of the most difficult topics to talk about, and what I believe to be one of those difficult topics in economics and even business morals, is this whole China situation. I mean, obviously Coca-Cola likes the fact that they drink, you know, 1.5 billion people drink a Coke a day. There's more pictures of Colonel Sanders over there than there are in Mao, right? So in one hand, it's terrific. On the other hand, you know what's screwing people here? We're offloading pollution and child labor. We're burying some manufacturers here with that kind of stuff. Yet, you really can't, if you see a family here that's challenged by inflation, you really can't, and they walk in and see the, you know, I guess if you can find a pair of blue jeans made here, which I used to see in the Duluth trading catalogs and L.L. Bean and those places, you don't see them anymore because they're $20 more. Maybe they still have them somewhere buried in the catalog, but nobody bought them. So you can really, if a lady walks into, you know, what's Old Navy, the cheap Gap, mm-hmm. you know, and sees, you know, blue jeans for $20 for her 5 kids and doesn't have the dough, and the stuff made in the U.S. is $60. I really can't blame her. Can you? I know they're not going to last as long, but the fact is the kids all got new blue jeans, right?
Right. And I mean, people, you know, even, no matter what their allegiance would be, if they can't afford to be patriotic, so they'll have to concede. You know, they'll buy it from a foreign competitor.
Yeah.
It's cheaper. So, you really can't blame people.
Well, we're going to go to break, John. We come back. Let's talk a little bit about this economics prize and what these guys wrote. And just in general, on a Columbus Day, I mean, obviously the markets are open, banks, and guess what? Our public employees are again off. We're not. It's always good for me to be paying other people and they come to work. Just saying. S&P futures up 8, NASDAQ futures up 54. Be right back.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Here's the thing. If you can't spot the sucker in your first half hour at the table, then you are the sucker.
Well, Northbank Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures are up 8, and the S&P is up 54. The academics. These are guys like Mr. Flanagan, academics, and guys like Kevin O'Neill. Are we overdosed with academics on this show? We got you, we got Kevin, we got Hal, Russell.
It's time for a purge.
Time for a purge.
Too much intelligence.
Even Lou was taught at the Air Force Academy, or does once in a while. The only guys that are the dopos are guys like you and me, right?
Well, yeah. It's fun to be in the minority.
I thought you were going to say fun to be a dopo, but you didn't.
It's fun to be a dopo. That's all I know. So
it had spice to the mix. Right?
We had something. I actually read, John, I cannot find it anywhere. These guys, I think it was a couple of guys, I have no idea, wrote a paper regarding, they were economists, and they, they were free market kind of economists. And it's funny when I joust with Hal all the time, because he's such a free market guy. But I've always said, once you mess with the free market at all, then you got a problem, and you got to kind of follow it through. Well, these guys took it to the nth degree, where they said, if governmental policy is basically so messed up to favor 10% of the people stealing all the money from the other 90%, which is kind of what you're seeing now.
Russia?
Well, we're doing that here.
No, that's not here. It's Russia.
We're getting there. What percentage of the wealth do you think the top 10% here own?
The top 10%?
Yeah. 80? The top 2%.
Top 2%'s like got to be 50 or 60.
Yeah. Okay. So, duh. And so their point was, if government's going to do that, they have to find an effective way, because there's a certain amount of creativity in doing that. They got to find a way to get the money out of their hands and get it back to the rest of the people so they can steal it again. Sounds weird, doesn't it? But it's almost an interesting thought. You can't just have 2% of the people with 90% of the wealth, because what are they going to do with it? I mean, it's much more healthy to have 10,000 people buying a bass boat than one person buying a 400-foot yacht.
I was wrong. It's only 30%. The top 1% hold 30% or so of here in the U.S.
That's pretty good still.
Yeah.
Well, when you consider there's a lot of land and houses and stuff, the individual people still own. But it's pretty interesting. John, Hal and I are always jousting. He says, everything is, should be free. And I will never argue that, except what if it's not? What if one guy gets a railroad, one guy's got an exit interstate near his place, the other guy does? It never turns out even whenever government gets involved, right? And Milton Friedman used to say the hardest thing in the world is to maintain a cartel or monopoly if you don't have government help. If you didn't give Commonwealth Edison a monopoly, they probably, once they got inefficient, somebody would kick them out, right? Or do better.
Yep.
But you need government. Every monopoly or a cartel has government shooing the other people away, because it's very difficult to do on your own. So,
well, I just reading the summary this morning, by the Nobel Committee, that governments, what are they, extractive institutions, is what the term they use for it, where you take everything from the people so that they have nothing more to contribute or to produce, so you have to redistribute it eventually in order to hang on to power, so that you don't find yourself at the end of a gun in the revolution, and also to stimulate the kind of wealth that you continue to aggregate or steal from the people below you. So it's just, I guess it's some sort of a depressing, but I think very real phenomenon. And there's lots of evidence for this in this country and other countries as well, as some extreme examples too, just in reading over this. So,
well, what do you think is happening in what you just said? Apply that to the current campaign. I know most people have already made their decision about. I've not made my decision. Well, I can't vote for you, Jen. You're too argumentative. I'm leaning towards Lou. Then again, he's pretty. Somebody,
if asked, I will not serve, Todd. Don't worry.
Russell absolutely doesn't want me to vote for him because he doesn't want his name anywhere in there. So, So who does that leave? Hal?
What about me?
I could vote. No, Greg actually wants me to vote for it. I can vote for you.
Yeah, there we go.
Do we have any Greek presidents before? Spiro Agnew almost got there. He didn't last very long.
Yeah. Nope.
Dukakis almost.
I'm going to say that Spiro is not your shining light of your...
Dukakis is the joke of the entire last, 30 years?
I have an interesting question. Jan, you may be the only one. Well, you might as well. What did Spiro Agnew bring to the ticket? Why did Nixon ever pick him? Just some stumble bum governor or crook from New Jersey. I mean, it wasn't like Lyndon Johnson.
Maryland. I mean, he was the East Coast. Nixon was California. I think they were looking for geographic balance. He was a governor, I think, when he was named to the ticket, wasn't he? And
That's what he went down for, right?
Yeah.
Being a crook, being a governor.
Maryland was, at that time, I forget how this corresponds with Pelosi's family, the DeLisandros. They're the other big powerhouse family in Maryland. But he was a competent speaker, and it irritated a lot of the people on the other side the way he would use language with an uttering nabobs of negativism and all these word combinations with alliteration to make it look like he was a couple steps ahead of everybody when it came to putting stuff together. So he was, a lot like Nixon in many ways too. He was not, he didn't have the common touch with people. I think it was more of a geographic thing probably, and he hadn't really had any kind of a track record that made him a drag on the ticket. I had never heard of him until Nixon named him, so I guess that was a good thing, really. It didn't have come with a lot.
It wasn't very long. The investigation into the guy had to already be ongoing because they caught him like a year after he was in there, right, or two.
Well, he was in there until wasn't it the April before Nixon resigned? I have to go back and check my chronology.
Oh, so he made it into the second term, I guess.
Yeah, into the second term. He was reelected with him, and I think it was March or April when he resigned, and then the board was appointed.
Was he stealing highway money or something in Maryland?
It was a fairly small small time kind of stuff, really, as I recall. I mean, it wouldn't be the sort of thing that would get you kicked out in Illinois from anything.
God, you can't really compare.
I shouldn't say that. But,
you see both of the candidates now, the BS that's flying around, 30 days before an election, but virtually every campaign stop now, they both have realized that policy or otherwise, even though they don't seem to be able to give you, they're not going to come out and say anything intelligent, like, because we really have, in my opinion, two of the worst presidents I've ever seen essentially arguing which one was better during the campaign. Isn't that really what's happening, or am I just being too goofy here?
No, but there's been other examples before us, before our time, of equally distasteful people,
But not them running.
Claiming they were the paragon.
Right, but not them, not both of them being in the same campaign. This is unique.
I think there's probably precedent for it, but I'll have to do
no, I'm saying, when did we ever have a guy who was a president, lost to somebody, and now,
Grover Cleveland.
But it happened like once, but not in our lifetime.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, as they go around, they both have to have figured out that their combined policies of the last 8 years have buried a lot of people with prices and everything else. So one of them, every place he goes, if he's talking to people that clean, clean bathrooms, he's gonna cut taxes on the people that clean bathrooms. If he's talking to waiters, there's no tips, no tip income, or something else. And yet she's doing the same thing. She must realize that nobody can afford a house based on the prices of the house and how little people have gotten in terms of raises relative to prices. So she's running around saying, we're going to help you buy the house that you no longer can afford, which 20 years ago, 40 years ago, people could. They both sort of recognize the problem. But neither one of them appears to be smart enough to have a real policy for fixing it, because that would essentially admit that the policies of the last eight years have been horse bleep. Because neither one of them can do that, right? Because they're both in it together. I mean, the last 8 years between COVID and inflation, even though the two administrations are totally different sides, economically, they're joined at the hip, aren't they?
Well, they fit together very neatly because they're all looking for ways to extract support from people who have lost big time under presidents, regardless of what party they came from. So the only way they can feel they can get your vote is by trying to realign the traditional support that parties have enjoyed. And I think this is one of the big takeaways of this election cycle. And it was kind of made glaringly clear with Barack Obama's appearances last week, where I can't imagine how far he's fallen, since 2008 in those appearances in Pennsylvania, in effect hectoring, African American males into voting for Kamala Harris because she's one of you. It's just unbelievably tone deaf, for the people listening to it and for me. Well, I'm not African American, but I thought it was.
How do you know?
I'm waiting for Ancestry's next update. So, stranger things have happened. So.
What do you do if you get in the mail something that says we forgot you're 10% Aborigine or something, or they're 10% what are they guys? Some group before us.
Well, there's this all sorts of things. I think everybody is probably long before Ancestry has a profile to fit it. But this is the thing I take away from this election is how the suppositions about working class support for a party or traditional racial profiles of people who support party X or party Y, this is all changing as we speak, and I don't know if it's going to result in any difference in the outcome of elections from here on, but I do think that there's a kind of lack of stability in what the parties stand for and who they think they are and how they compare to other parties, and it's unusual. I think I can only think of a couple times where parties have morphed into their opposite so glaringly as they seems to be happening now.
Well, both sides.
And
this is a money show. Who's the richest African American?
I know he probably is in Chicago, but I don't know about Lincoln nationwide.
John?
Would it be Oprah?
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk. Oh, yeah, South Africa.
Right. Good. There you go. Well, I think, John, the funny thing is, I mean, however you talk to people, it's a big softball picnic last week. One of the guys, I was helping him cook. And a real smart guy. He owns a big steel process and so forth, and I think they're going to end up doing really well. They find the factory going. Anyway, it's a long story. I'll help have on someday. I can tell you about it. It's been a 20-year thing, in the making, and I think now it's really going to work out for the dude. They do a lot of coatings on steel that will make the steel, last longer for, bridges and stuff. It's pretty interesting. Anyway, and he was talking about this economy and this and that. And, he's very Republican. And I said, the interesting part, guy's name is Bob. I said, Bob, if you looked at the last 24 years, first he was kind of shocked when I said, but I'm sure he would have known if he thought about it for a second. I said, we've had 12, if you look back to 2000, we've been 12 years of Republicans, 12 years of Democrats. And I said, Bob, if you look at any big long list of oil production, inflation, how individual people have done in terms of salaries on people, how they've gone to median, mean income and so forth, median. So I challenge you to even tell me, if I took the numbers from the side, which president, which party was in presidency. He looked at me and he goes, I believe you when you say that. That's really interesting. I go, it's true. Everybody thinks there's this massive, there's policy differences on, abortion and things like that. But when it comes to the money part, it's been a straight steal by 100 people, Jen, hasn't it? And whoever's in power doesn't seem to challenge those people at all. And neither one of those people, these people, are going to do it either. right? I mean,
well, you look at the way people have, you know, I would say this time around responded to Trump's campaign compared to, say, in 2016 or 2020. And I find that there's, you know, a new recognition of, you know, how both parties, to some extent, have run out of steam. Trump is seen as a successor to the old Republican, you know, party, the McConnells, and, you know, the Lindsey Grahams, and people like that, that never had much popular appeal anywhere. Maybe in their own states, but
I'm not so sure they had appeal in their own house.
In their own house, in their own DNA circle.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think, you know, Trump muscled his way in, maybe more or less unwillingly, perhaps. But I think that the Republicans were totally opposed to and, you know, offended by his kind of stealing their thunder. But they didn't have any kind of talent pool of their own to draw from. So there's a grudging acceptance now of Trump as the face of the party, although he's going to be a lame duck president should he get elected. And that's not like, you know, J.D. Vance may start a new lineage if he has any, you know, long legs in the party. But the Democrats, conversely, have exposed themselves as a party that supports a doddering, ineffective person just because they can exercise that power. And they've got a successor now, the vice president, who now is actually facing scrutiny, which she didn't really in California or while she was vice president. And I think people are kind of mystified at who these people really are.
Well, if you look at the scrutiny, it changes. I mean, some people, and you know, people are very close to me. If you dug up tomorrow, and I don't think he would ever do something like this, but the Trump, you know, ran over a family on purpose, it wouldn't matter. Whatever, it's okay because he's our guy. None of the stuff in her background, and I'm not a big fan. None of the stuff in her background has any of the baggage, in terms of money, in terms of potential friends, in terms of, you know, I won't say, you know, dealings with the Russians, maybe owing people money, not paying taxes. Nobody is ever going into the presidential spot with that kind of baggage. And I find Cheney maybe did some of the stuff with the trade and all the other stuff. But I find it absolutely disgusting, and yet other people don't seem to think it's a problem. I mean, no matter what, it's at a point now where if you like somebody, you don't care what they did. I mean, she doesn't have any of that baggage.
I picked a different time.
What she has, her money is in a.
I don't care about her money.
I do.
Yeah, but I care about her objectives and her political philosophy and the kind of, you know, ideas that have produced her and enabled her and, you know, driven her only upwards without really a shred of talent.
This is not an endorsement at all. What I'm saying is I could never vote for Hillary because she was a crook in her futures account. I don't care if she was going for dog catcher. There's got to be somebody else.
Didn't Van Buren bring slaves into the White House?
What I'm saying, everybody has their... The fact that I know people that did work for the guy in New York, never got paid, everybody got sued. The man is a disgusting human being. Now, will he be a better president than her? I don't know. But the point is, why is that even our choice? Why was Hillary our choice? Why did she go to jail for getting wrong money in her account? I mean, I don't get it. I just don't. I mean, I know I'm too South Side, John, but I can't just let bygones be bygones on this stuff. I mean, she has her own... I mean, do I think she's talented enough to be president? No.
I directed the latest Tucker Carlson video is an interview with an Asian, you know, an Indian attorney from San Francisco who has known Harris since, I think, 2004 when they first met, and has kind of watched her career, you know, and how she, you know, progressed up the social ladder and the political ladder. And it's one of the most depressing, you know, examples of incompetency.
It's like Obama.
But you know, this, it's the equally sinister, Tom. I mean, I think she and the reason Obama is out hectoring people to vote for her is because they both come from
I would have liked to see a conversation between Woodrow Wilson and Obama. If you could bring them together, what would happen?
But John, we're arguing two different things. You're arguing the choice as we have it. I'm saying, why is this our choice?
Because the reason we have Trump is because the party selection process for candidates is morally, ethically, economically, politically bankrupt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only way you could get somebody like Trump, who clearly responds to what people of all sorts of different stripes see in their political leaders, and they're disgusted with both of them, both parties. This is why I became a Trump supporter, Tom. I was so offended by both parties that when I saw Trump come on the scene and everybody reviled him, I said, that's my guy.
I've talked to you on 100 occasions that the whole idea of an outside guy with some balls, which he has, coming in and cleaning up Washington, not my whole life, but the last 20 years, I've surely wanted to see that. Anybody but him.
Well, we won't have too many choices to pick from, Tom, when they come.
Well,
that's the thing. To be a true outsider in this kind of climate, you've got to be
shift gears a hair. Why do people like, I'll use Tom Dart here in the city, I'll use the guy from Starbucks, who I don't really know very well, but they made some kind of overtures and make it to the next level, and they got slapped down so fast. Who's doing the slapping down? And the second thing is,
I mean, Howard Schultz is kind of boring.
I'm not saying I'm a fan, but the fact is, he didn't make it down the block before he got slapped back. I mean, who are the slappers? I want to know. I mean, Tom Dart, he was thinking about running for mayor, and that lasted about a week, didn't it, Jen?
Yeah, well, there is a uniparty at the local and national, international levels too, where there is a campaign always to identify the people who are real threats, the people who are articulate, smart, have money, don't truck with any of the powers that be, have probably left a trail of offenses against those people all their careers, and those people are never in the running.
Well, look at the for instance, Jen, the what I believe to be the intelligence, the background, and the knowledge of Elliot Spitzer compared to these two people. And that guy, the minute he did one thing wrong, they had his phones tapped.
Oh, but I think, you know, his thing wrong was not that. It was the fact that he was on to the financial corruption leading up to the, you know, the
He went after people on New York Stock Exchange. He bruised a lot of big egos.
Well, he exposed the banks for their corrupt lending process.
That's what I'm saying. But in terms of talent and ability, compare them to these two, you're not even on the same planet.
But there was no way he was ever going to be permitted to out the people who, you know, wanted that thing to unfold as it did. And it's from both parties, and it's not just people in this country who wanted it to happen, too.
Well,
they wanted to make sure they got their money before the whole thing
came crashing. Well, I did a... We have a second here, a couple minutes before, but I ever tell you... My story of the Buckingham Bar. You've been in there. I brought you in there a couple times, didn't I, Jim, before it closed?
Yeah.
My story of the Buckingham Bar. Well, the Elliot Spitzer gets indicted, right? So a lot of guys from the trading floor, because he went after a couple of guys in New York Stock Exchange. This is what's so weird about people, John. Why I love doing the show is people can't stand it when they're being screwed by somebody. But if somebody goes after them, they don't like that person either, because that could have been them. It's kind of, I mean, human beings are really weird with this kind of stuff, aren't they? Everybody, I traded in the OEX. I traded in some small stocks for a while until the OEX came out. But then I went in there. I was not a individual trader, stock trader kind of guy. And it just was not my talent. I liked doing the market better. But everybody in a trading, there are all these different crowds, right? And if you could be in a crowd where a Xerox in your crowd or IBM's in your crowd. Well, all these people, something like 50-60% of all the stock trading in the New York Stock Exchange some days, maybe it was 40, came from the CBOE floor. Because when people traded options, they always traded stock against it. It's a derivative product. So the stock flow came, and everybody knew, the specialists that obeyed the rules and the specialists who didn't. I mean, there were specialists that were fair and did the thing properly. There were these specialists where you sell somebody an option, because you knew you could buy the stock, 10,000's offered at, you know, 61 1/4, and all of a sudden you go out and you try and buy it, you see it on the screen, it offered, and all of a sudden it trades ahead. Where the specialists trade ahead of you. Well, wait a minute, he's not supposed to do that. I mean, if you come out there to buy it and it's in the book, he's not supposed to trade ahead of you and make it quarter 3/8, so you got to pay 3/8. I mean, it's slimy. It's, you know, whatever. Some guys did it, and the enforcement in the New York Stock Exchange was non-existent. So the SEC was like the, they were the New York Stock Exchange South. They were run by those people, the specialist firms. They're all big firms. So all of a sudden, Spitzer goes after a few of these guys for New York Stock Exchange for not enforcing their own rules. Well, of course, the guys here are somewhat happy that the guy they didn't like is being de-pants, basically. Except, oh, wait a minute. They might come after us now. What's with this Spitzer guy? It's none of his business. So the guy gets indicted. I'm sitting at the bar at the Buckingham, and there's about 5-6 guys there, and they're all cheering, right? And I go, no, the deal was, now he was a rich man. His family had a lot of money, right, Spitzer? So he's taking cash out of his bank account. And so they, to protect him, they set up, this is before cell phones, I believe, or before people used them, they tapped his phone lines to protect him because they thought he was being embezzled against. That was the excuse. So then they find out that he's getting out money for this hooker, right? Which I'm not absolving him of or anything like that. So these guys sitting at the bar go, yeah, this guy's, he's a bleep. And I said, let's just take this from the top, guys. You guys are like, you're big swinging bleeps, aren't you? Well, yeah. I said, suppose, the wife says, we want to paint the house, and you don't really want to do it, but, the wife wants to do it, you do it. Now you get some guy over, and he's going to paint the house for $15,000, but he wants cash. Now, are you going to give him the $15,000 if he's $5,000 cheaper? Well, yeah. And I said, okay, well, then now you're going to go to Vegas. I can't imagine guys like you going to Vegas with less than 10 sheets in your pocket, again, a sheet being 1,000. Well, no. So then maybe you get on you're going to go to the Bahamas or something for a week, and now there's casinos down, and you're taking another 8. Well, yeah. I said, okay, now you've taken, $25,000-$33,000 in cash out of your bank account. Now, to protect you, should I put a tap on your phone? Well, hell no. Well, they did it to him. Well, yeah, but I know, what if they did it to you? Well, it'd be bullshit. I said, well, okay, but that's what they did to him. Yeah, but I don't like him. okay, where are we going with this? Now, the question is, who did that, John, and why?
The same people who did it to Trump's people and wiretapped him and spilled the beans about confidential meetings. The FBI was in on it, too. This is the culture we have, Tom. And it's, I'll tell you, the one thing I'll just, finish my discussion of the election, but seeing what Harris accomplished in California when she was the DA in San Francisco, it's why San Francisco turned into the place it has, and it's why Portland and Minneapolis and maybe Chicago are headed in the same direction. And it's part of her politics. It's part of
Chicago. Chicago's worse. Chicago's worse because it was an industrial base. It's gone.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if any presidential candidate imaginable is able to reverse it, this trend quickly enough. But after watching the Tucker Carlson video, I can see all sorts of international struggles that are being played out on this American stage.
We only got 30 days. We only got 30 days. Can we get a third person? I think not. Huh?
No.
Then you got to help me. Who am I voting for? You're out.
It looks like Harris is taking it in danger now too, because allegations of Wallace's inappropriate behavior with young men is starting to come out when he was a teacher or coach, and this is not likely to juice her numbers his numbers.
So why don't I could just vote for Russell. If the one vote comes out there, say it was you, they'll be mad at you, not me.
I'll be careful. The Chicago Board of Election Commissioners are really tough on write-ins.
Yeah, you don't want anything like that. You stick around for Nancy. We got some good stuff for her with the mortgage stuff's all over the place. We'll see if anything's moving there. Audrey said some set of five houses on the market now. There's like 20, so things are freeing up a hair. SP Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures up 62. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3454.
708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low-price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now, 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lone Robank, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom O. Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 10. NASDAQ futures up 63. Individual stocks, I don't know, much moving pretty much anywhere. Well, we got Meta up $4 a stock. The big seven is up. NVIDIA's up $1.38. Tesla's up $2.26. Tesla took a huge hit on Friday as their driverless cars speech that Musk gave the night before went over kind of like a stink bomb in church. It was down like $20. It was a lot. Over in Europe, these guys were mixed earlier. They're still sort of mixed. The X up 54.3%. FTSE up 5%. They were flat before. Now FTSE's pretty much flat. CAC down 19.3%. Over in Asia, Nikkei, I've got them trading 10-11 last, so that for some reason they're not trading today. I can't believe they're off for Columbus Day. Hang Seng down 159.7%. Shanghai up 66.2%. Is now, they said this weekend they might go into bigger deficits. We'll ask Nancy about this. Nothing is a bigger help for indebtedness like more indebtedness or something. I don't know how that works. Dow on Friday up 409. S&P up 35, NASDAQ up 60. We've been straight up pretty much lately. I think we're going to be up even more by the election. Crude oil down $1.50, 74.06. Brent down $1.50, 77.55. Natural gas down 6X, 256. RBOB down 5 cents to 210. Gold down 6.50, but 66.69 was up on Friday. Silver up down 34 cents, 31.41. As the metals are hanging in there, copper down 8 cents, even though they're down today, 4.40. Foreign exchange, the dollar's been strong as the euro is way under 110 at 109.1. British pound, 130.3. It was over 132. So we have Bitcoin with a big move up here today, 2,300 at 3.7%, 64,948. Not sure where that came from, but it's way up. What do you have for us? Quick traffic, weather, sports. Bears win.
Oh, yeah. Real good on that one. It is currently 7:36 a.m. here on October 14th, 2024. Current weather in Chicago is 46 degrees at O'Hare on this Columbus Day. A high of 57 today with expected showers and a higher chance of showers tonight with a low of 41. Down in Phoenix, 77 degrees right now, clear skies. Later in the day, sunny and a high of 99. Of course, we saw the MLB in yesterday. Dodgers won their game against the Mets 9-0. And in the NFL yesterday, week 6 of the 2024 season, Bears won their fourth game this season. This game saw them beat the Jaguars 35-16. And tonight we'll see the Bills play the Jets. Game starts at 7:15 p.m. Central Standard Time. Over to you, Chief.
I'm glad you kept us out of the traffic mess where I think a pedestrian got hit on the Eisenhower and flipped them all the way into the oncoming traffic coming the other way.
Oh, geez.
The whole thing was closed down for like hours. Ugh. Nance, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
All right. Happy Columbus Day. What do you think of Columbus being Jewish?
I don't think anything. I'm just happy the Bears won. My head is just stuck into that one. And Notre Dame won.
Yeah.
I mean, gee, what a great weekend.
The Irish, it's gotten to the point where the game was, Janet, was, I think, 2 hours and 45 minutes old, just starting the fourth quarter, and lightning showed up, so they had a one-hour rain delay, a lightning delay before anybody came back. What time did the thing end, John? Like 7 o'clock? Started at
2:20? Oh, yeah. I couldn't believe until I saw the final score online, how long it's been.
Yeah. It's a... I was at the last Lightning game, Nance. And if you
when was that, Tom? 40 years ago? 50? 60?
Not 60. Those days, they didn't stop for Lightning. I don't think
Lightning, the fire, flood, hurricane.
But the it is known as the UFO game, Nance. On NBC, they kept showing the Lightning, and if you look close, if you go on YouTube and search for Notre Dame Lightning game, it'll come right up, and it'll show you these little saucers, like seeming like running in and out of the Lightning. So one of my buddies, Dick Belder, who's such a character, I see him in the gym. I go, Belder, he's from Notre Dame. I go, Belder, what'd you think of the saucers and the UFOs? He goes, Tommy, everybody knows that they head for the Lightning. It's the most energy in anything, and that's how they recharge themselves so they go back to where they live. I go, everybody knows that? Well, yeah, everybody knows that. I go, okay then. Do you know that, Nance?
No, I didn't know that.
Well, now you do. Now you do. So if you come from some other place and you got a saucer, in order to get some gas in the thing to go home, you fly in the Lightning and you gather up that energy and off you go.
Off you go. Did they stop the game back then?
Oh, God, yeah. It was like a 2-hour delay.
Oh, wow.
But the thing that pissed me off to this day, and of course my brother was there, is it possible to have a family member that doesn't disagree with you on everything? It's about 2 minutes before half, and the guy on the sidelines with the big orange gloves, John, the guy who tells the ref when he can start the commercials, they have this break, and they have this long commercial break. So the guy says, okay, you can start with like 2 minutes to go before the half. Now, they could have finished the half easy. All of a sudden, they go something like, would usher number one please come to the main booth? So I nudge my brother and I go, I see the storm coming. I go, they're going to evacuate the place. And he says, well, how come you always think you know something? I go, Dan, who the hell is usher number one? It's like, would Mr. Clean show up to United, you know, at the airport? It means somebody barfed, right? Duh. I mean, doesn't it? I mean, who's Mr. Clean? It's the janitor. Anyway, so sure enough, they stop it with a minute to go and a half. They could easily have made it to the half if they didn't have a commercial break, knowing the storm was coming. Anyway, the thing was, it was an hour delay. And Jan, were you listening on the radio? They were.
No,
they,
I remember that day, though.
Yeah, these guys were going bat bleep on the radio Saturday. It's like, just call the game. These guys in Stanford, they're getting their ass kicked. They'll be happy to go to their. What do you want to bring this back for? At least have a running clock. It turns out they shifted to another station and had just as many commercials in the fourth quarter after everybody was gone.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, Dance. What's going on in the world? You and John talk. Audrey says some houses have come on the market. She says you're busier. You should be busy. You guys are good at what you do. Is things freeing up a little or a lot or just a bit?
Just a bit. But this is a time of year where people are not really, you know, they're getting ready for the holidays now. Not really getting ready for, you know, looking and moving. So a bit could be sensed as more if it wasn't just this late in October, so close to Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Is it a fair statement, showing my age here, that when you and I'd say stuff like, you know, it used to be everybody wanted to have the kids in school and all that kind of stuff, it seems to me, I try not to pay attention because I don't want to, I mean, well, it's good at what she does, but she's better if I stay away from it. It seems to me that virtually all of her clients now are older people, either sizing up, sizing down, sizing to from upstairs bedrooms to on floor bedrooms or something. I haven't seen her with a family and kids in a while, or am I just not seeing them?
No, because a lot of the people are set. That's what I mean. Their kids are in school, they're really more set. What you're seeing now are the people that really just want to go. A lot of older people are saying, you know, I don't really need these, you know, my families are done, I don't really need these houses with, you know, 20 stairs going up, and they're looking more for ranch style homes. So people are right now, she's correct. I mean, that's what I'm seeing as well. It's just an older generation trying to move themselves more around.
And everybody seems like they've got money. It's all, they're all selling a place, it's cash for the next place. It's just kind of trading around. It's not, you don't see the traditional scraping of 15% down or 10% and calling you up. Some of that, but not all of it, right?
No, you're seeing more of the, you know, I don't want to use the word older, but older population, you know, trying to make a move now if things could open up a little bit so that they can, you know, hopefully go into a more structured environment that has, you know, what they need, if they can. You know, some people cannot, but, you know, so they're at least out looking, saying, hey, this is what I would like.
Or is anybody doing, is the stuff down far enough to be refinancing at all?
I've had people approach about refis, but they have a new rule they started this year where if you purchase a home, you cannot refi and pull cash out. It's all about cash. Can't pull cash out for 1 year. So the refinance people have been calling about trying to get some cash out so they can now make the repairs that they were looking for. So it's just a strange market right now. Just strange. It's unusual to have people still calling this late, but actually, you know, it's the most calls I've gotten probably all year is about now. So it's just markets opening up. And you got to remember, the weather's been really nice too. I mean, this is, you know, today is not a great day, but it's almost been like September weather in October.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Well, yesterday was gorgeous. I mean,
yeah. I mean, we're just way off on the weather, the weather as well. So you're seeing more people out and about, where by now maybe they would be more, you know, inside. So it's just a whole host of things that are just rolling in a direction that go.
Nancy, I would wish you that I would have gone in the other room and sat. You and Jen and Carl probably had an amazing discussion regarding the hurricane situation, the various types and iterations of the flood insurance, and if you paid once, you're kind of on secret probation. If you paid twice, you're blackballed or something. And you know, something about it. Was he saying, Jen, was about if you have a slab, if you want to rebuild in the same spot, they make you raise the house up or something, and if you got a slab house, you can't really raise it up. And it's all that stuff is sort of involved down there. Is it? Has that ever happened in any of the areas you've been involved in? You were involved in that Tinley Park kind of flood of a few years ago, weren't you, Nance?
Yes.
What happened there? Did they end up making the floodplain bigger, or what?
They really did called in experts. I mean, they paid for it. They did several engineering studies, and they rerouted the whole thing. They restructured the land where I don't think they'll have that problem anymore, because they really did do a good job rerouting everything.
Rerouting, in other words, they have more water retention somehow.
Well, and they reconstructed, they reconstructed whatever the problems were.
How do you reconstruct a creek? Wasn't it Tinley Creek?
No, it really was that they had just a line where it was like if somebody turned on a faucet, right? They had just like a dam where all these houses were that the water went straight. So they reconstructed all that where it's not going to happen again. Which is really good. And they've had, they know in that part of Tinley they have a low water table, and they've put in more pumps and you know, places to catch the water before it even gets there. So thank God they did the right thing. But in Florida with these hurricanes, they have to do something to let the people, I mean, if you can't stay there because this is what is going to happen, then it's best they start making some, you know, rules around it. I mean, let's face it, like in Marco Island, they actually built homes now that are, they claim are hurricane proof, so you can't just rebuild on the water's edge like that and just hope it doesn't happen again.
Well, I think you could be like pretty much windproof. I don't know if anybody's storm surge proof.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but But in one of these storms, that did hit Marco. A lot of these homes that were hurricane proof or whatever they claim, they held up, and they're right on the water with everybody else. I don't know what they did or how they're doing it or whatever, but it, you know, it's helpful. But these storms are really, I mean, Florida's in a mess. I just imagine that their real estate market is going to fall like crazy now.
Well, good. What did Carl say, Jan? It was some of the places down there from his friends in these condo, the homeowner things, the amount they're paying now in insurance and in taxes, just if you had a mortgage on that, you'd need $70,000 a year just for that piece of the mortgage. It's like 20-some grand a year or 30 or some number. It was more than that. It was more like 40, wasn't it, Jen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that people are starting to, you know, I'm getting calls from people down there that want to come back. They just said it's, you know, they went down there to retire. It's, you know, supposed to be more like easy living, and they just can't afford the mess, the rebuilds, all of it.
You think property values have to be going up in like Phoenix and Scottsdale and those kinds of places, don't they?
From what I heard, that's the only reason that area has gone up is because people from California are running over there. And because they got so much money out of what they sold in California, it doesn't seem like a lot of money to them. But that's it. But now, people in Phoenix are just saying it's too hot. The infrastructure isn't there. There's problems there as well.
Well, they had out of the last 120 days, they've been over 100, like 115 of them or something.
I saw in the news this morning that Phoenix was 103 yesterday, which is just, yeah. I mean, that blows out car windows. I mean, they just don't talk about it, but it's probably not really a great situation.
I've been there,
either.
I was there in the summer a couple of times. We used to have a branch down there, and it's, I mean, the nice thing about it is even, well, I don't know about now, it seems like it's warmer, but you could pretty much do whatever you wanted till about 9:30, and then between 9:30 and 10, it went up like 15 degrees. As soon as the sun kind of grabbed hold, it just all of a sudden you could see the thermometer racing up. But at night and the morning were pretty much okay. But I'm not so sure it's even, you know, this year it was even like that. But so what, John? What do you have for Nancy? You have better questions than me.
Oh, Nancy, I was looking at the 30-year fixed rate mortgage number, which looks like it dipped at the end of September, you know, when the Fed dropped its interest rate, and then is back up again. So that seems to have been sort of an emotional response almost to the Fed's rate drop. It didn't translate to anything long term. So are you seeing people who are, you know, even if they were in the market for a house or they have money set aside for a down payment, that the interest rates are still way too high and they're kind of steering clear? Or,
you know, this just came out this past week where you were right, the rates had gone down, and it was looking kind of promising that, you know, they actually did someone at 5.625 on a 30-year just literally 2 or 3 weeks ago, and that same situation came up for me on Thursday. And the rate would have been, you know, it's back into the high sixes or mid sixes. I just sat there and was like, oh, geez, now we're going, how could we have this big a swing? But if you pull up the 10-year treasury bond, you can see it.
Yeah.
It's right there, clear as day, that, you know, we had the dip and it didn't last, where everybody keeps saying it's going to go down. I actually had a customer yesterday said, well, oh, what you're saying may be true, but Trump is going to get in and he's just going to change all this around. And so I said, well, okay, so if you buy this, what are you going to do if that doesn't happen? And they just said, it's going to happen. Like, I can't think about the other stuff. So finally, when we got past hypothetically, if it doesn't happen, what are you going to do? And she said, then I have to stay where I'm at.
I can interject. It is pretty scary, and it shows maybe that we need a little bit better in our economic education. if anybody thinks that these rates and the inflation where it is isn't mostly Trump's fault, or not, the COVID wasn't his fault, happened when he was in office, it's crazy. I mean, when you saw just what you described, Vance, these guys dropped the short-term rate by 0.5%. Finally, the rest of the world is realizing how inflationary that's probably going to be. So the long-term rate is up more than the short-term rate is down. It's up 0.6 since they did it.
Well, you're adding logic just to a purely emotional situation, and it doesn't work. I mean, it just doesn't. Wouldn't you agree, John?
Yeah. Well, the emotional levels now, I think, are kind of off the charts. I mean, there's so much like anxiety, even if it's not. There's certainly no euphoria that I can see, but people are extremely spooked and you know, kind of creeped out by where they're at financially.
Correct. That's what I have seen in the past, like when the rates went back up, and now it's just wasn't a myth or just a blip for a day, and it's kind of like, you know, going back up where it is. I've seen people just exactly the way John described it, and everything is very emotional because people have been waiting for this election to get the Democratic people out, thinking that the Republican people will be the answer. And Tom, no one is thinking in what you just said. No one.
Well, I mean,
I can tell you that right now. And the people that I've seen and dealt with, no one feels that way. They're angry. They're going to go to the polls and they're going to vote.
Yeah, I mean, nobody looks at it as really a 20-some year phenomenon.
No.
I mean,
it really started in 68 the first time. You know, this time it started when Bush went to war and put on a credit card, and the deficit started to balloon. And it hasn't stopped yet. I mean, and neither of these two. That's why I said earlier, it's incredible the two people, well, she wasn't president, but she was part of it. Two people with probably the worst presidential terms I think I've ever seen, run and say the other one was worse. I mean, God. What a mess.
I don't know what to say, but I do know that the perception John described is true. The rates did go, you know, they dipped, they went back up. It's extremely emotional out there, and a lot of people are hoping that this gets better. And if you really question them, they really don't like, probably don't like, like someone said to me, Camilla went from being the most underly liked, or, you know, worst vice president that has ever been out there, and completely been transformed into a presidential candidate that's leading. It's they just stand there with their hands up, like, wait until. It's too much for people to process right now. It just really is.
How do you know what's truth and what isn't? I mean, because it's all non-truth, and people, 30 days to go to election, will say anything for a vote.
So it's very sad out there. It really is, but things are opening up a little bit, but how long it'll stay, I really can't say.
Well,
at
the prices, you know this more than anybody, Nance. If houses are going to stay at this price, which is incredibly high, it's up God knows what in the last 5 years, I'll make that 8 years, with the number that neither one of these buffoons will tell us. Nobody will admit to the fact that in the last 8 years, four of which were each responsible for, housing prices are up 40%. You're not going to get that out of either one of them. Okay, so the only way that you're going to find people getting in those houses is either her giving somebody $25,000 for the down payment, or him saying he's going to lower interest rates down to 1% again, or 2%, 3%. Sorry, mortgage rates were never 1%. The only way a regular person now can look at a house at this level and find they're behind in the place is if mortgage rates are 3%, right?
Yep.
And that's not going to happen.
Unfortunately, unfortunately, I believe that statement is true. And the key difference between this and like when Carter was in, I believe, just my opinion, is that the taxes, the real estate taxes weren't as high as they are now. It's just crazy.
Why, just out of curiosity, why do you suppose that, you know, Trump put in the part about, this is a few years ago, I mean, who knows what the motivation was, but he didn't like the, you know, the blue states, the rich blue states, because they didn't like him. So he, in his tax bill, he had this $10,000 maximum for mm-hmm. deduction of state and local. Okay, that was, I'll say that was 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. But between the two of them, they've engineered so much inflation that all kinds of people, not just the rich people in Connecticut, have more than $10,000 in state and local taxes. It's affecting everybody. Why is he not being painted with that brush? The Democrats are too dumb to even bring that up. I mean, now people...
Well, I guess you just answered your own question now. So.
Yeah, I mean maybe the stuff that is so obvious. I mean, you know what's weird about this is not... I don't know if even why you would even think of this, Nance or John, but when I came into the business long, long time ago, the market was... the Dow was 800, all right? Now the Dow is... what is it, 46,000 or some friggin' number? I'll find it here. But somewhere up there. When I started the business, if you lost over $3,000 on a capital gain, either in stocks or in a house or in another business or whatever you were in, you could only deduct $3,000 toward your income that year. But you could do another $3,000 going forward. So if you lost, you know, $6,000 trading IBM in 1981, it took you 2 years to take it off your income. Well, now, guess what that number is 40 years later, 40-some years later?
I think it's still the same.
Same number. Why would all the geniuses we have on TV and all these financial channels and all these guys that are so smart and CNBC every day writing articles, how is that number allowed to be 3,000? What do you suppose happens right now if how many people bought 500 shares of NVIDIA at 130, and someday somewhere, hope it doesn't happen, the thing's trading 50. How many lifetimes, if somebody loses $100,000 there, how many lifetimes that person going to have to live to be able to write it off? Why is that number like 100,000 now? Nobody ever brings it up. Right? I mean,
They do not. It's just a standard 3,000, 3,000.
But it's insane. But how many, I'm going to say, there's people in Flossmoor right now that I don't think that Trump was targeting. They're paying more than $10,000 in taxes, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think more. People are paying $10,000. Just I think the average tax bill is somewhere between $7,000 and $10,000. I never see them less than that in Cook. In Will and DuPage, it's even higher than that.
Yeah.
But in the I don't know which tax thing it was. Trump's or the one before him, it seemed like there's been a bunch. When I was a Ute, I used to do people's taxes. And you guys remember this. Maybe not you, Nancy, you're young. You remember you could actually deduct. The standard deduction was nowhere near as big as it is now. And some people like Kevin will say, wait a minute, you know, Trump raised the standard deduction. He did. But it didn't begin to account for this. If you bought, in those days, say you made $18,000 or something, you'd go to a table and it would say, okay, sales tax in Illinois at the time was what, 7.5 maybe, Jen? Would say, okay, at $18,000, we figured you spent this much on stuff, food and whatever it was. You got to take off, what, like $400 or something, Jen? But if you bought a car, you know, say you paid $4,000 for a car and you paid $7 on that, you got to take off the $280 in addition to the other if you bought a big enough item. I don't know if you remember that, Nance. How many people now do you think are paying over $10,000 in property taxes? I know in my neighborhood people are paying $25,000, $30,000. And oh, by the way, they go out and buy a car and it's $60,000. What's that up to now? Like, John, 9? So now you're talking $5,600. You're talking $30,000 right there. After tax, give me a, give me a friggin' break. I mean, Trump buried people with this thing, and nobody's bitching. The people that should be bitching are the ones voting for him.
I think that's how much they hate other things. That
I guess, that's true. But I mean, this stuff sort of gets buried in the. It's like Jan and I were talking earlier. It's an amazing show, isn't it, Jan? What people focus in and what they don't.
Right. Like, I mean, the FEMA thing that's come out that, you know, they use that to pay for the migrants being here. That's not right at all.
It's a total crack of BS. Total crack of BS.
You know, my big fear is, let's say if Trump were to get elected and overtime pay is not taxed, and maybe that will give some greater stability to the job market because, you know, employers won't have to hire additional people if workers are willing to work more and more overtime because they'll be able to take more of that money home. This would be a nice thing, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's going to be probably just as hard a year from now or 2 years from now to do what people think that the election can make happen for them, and that's to buy a house or to buy a car or to finance an education for their kids. And I just think there's an awful lot of disaffection that's likely to happen no matter who gets in. In the hopes that people are pinning on either candidate, it's because they're so disturbed at the kind of situation they find themselves in. And once they start seeing that the political solution doesn't really come close to fixing what's wrong in their lives, then I don't know where they go next. And I think this is the, you know, going back to that Nobel Prize, you know, the winners and you know, the way people begin to become disaffected with their entire system because they don't see anything in it that's working for them. I have a hunch that that's going to happen this time around, no matter who gets elected.
I'm not so sure either one of these people should really want this job. I don't see next year as a good one, I mean, with the market's price and everything. But just one real quick question. We're over a little bit, but that's all right. You guys are worried. I just don't get the idea that, I mean, even Caesar, not that we could really could interview the guy, even Caesar didn't think he had the power. Hey, I went out to 5 bars this week. I really like bartenders. How about if I say bartenders don't have to pay taxes? If ever is an admission that your tax law is pretty screwed up, it's when you seem to think that you can identify individual people you like and they don't get to pay them. Well, who gets to do that? Is that the ultimate dictator, or what is that? Both of them are trying to do it. That, oh, no, homeowners get a break. Why don't you just fix the damn law so everybody gets a break? Or is that just me?
That's the same. I mean, Chicago's, you know, giving breaks to people who live on the South Side to ride Metro. I mean, everybody else is subsidizing the train fares of people from another identified part of the city. I mean, this is not a long-term solution to anything.
Well, they didn't allow it to, but they didn't really put up much of a fight. The 5,000 to 8,000 people used to ride the South Side thing for the exchange floors. That's the problem there, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, Nance, thank you. Am I ever going to see you? You know what? What are the chances of me seeing not just one of you guys separately, but actually together someday? I'd give that the same chance as maybe a snowball in hell, or what?
Well, we gotta do this. We have to do this.
I can't believe Don's saying this. I mean, I have been sick the past 2 weeks though, very ill, but I'm available anytime.
All right. Well,
so you guys got to plan it.
Let's get this together. My brother's having his big apple squeeze on Saturday.
Oh, where's that? Is that, where does he go for that?
At his place. And there might be a ride coming from downtown, John, so.
Oh.
But then you got to squeeze some apples. You can't just sit there and drink.
Oh, drink it. Okay.
Okay. Nance, you got to help me cook.
Okay.
SP Futures up 15. I cook so I don't have to squeeze. Anyway, SP Futures up 15. Nance,
I don't know
up
where
90.
Your brother lives, Tom.
Well, we'll get you there. Okay. Matt Byrne, thank you very much. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
That's all, folks.